Hello, friends. Welcome to the Neighborhood Church Podcast. You can go to neighborhoodchurchmn.org to get more information on how you can get even better connected. Have a good and beautiful day.
We are going to be launching a new series next Sunday called All About Being Orthodox. But I thought with it being the new year, we talk about something new. And I start with a question. How can you tell if someone does CrossFit, is vegan, or gluten-free? Do you know how you can tell? Don't worry, they'll tell you. That's the joke, all right? That's a great joke. And I wanted to share with you that I am gluten-free, right? That's the funny part, right? I love telling my family over the holiday weekends. I told my sisters probably about 100 times. They're like, hey, do you know where the salad is? I'm like, do you know I'm gluten-free? They're like, there's no gluten in salad. I'm like, did you know I'm gluten-free? And they love it, right? And it's a funny thing because I love gluten, right? Who loves gluten here, right? Yes. Yeah, like pizza. Oh, man, do I love pizza. But anyways, gluten. Why am I telling this story? So the reason I went gluten-free was there was a, this summer was very stressful and it was very good. And I noticed that I was having some pain in my stomach. I was having headaches and I just tolerated it. It was like, this is just what happens. This is kind of what I deserve. And I never put words to it, but I just tolerated it. It's just like, I'm gonna shut it down. I'm gonna keep moving on. And I'd be telling my wife, and my wife would say, hey, Chris, maybe you should try change up your diet. Maybe, I don't know, eliminate gluten. And I'm like, that's fine. I'm fine. Like, you know, every other man in the world. Like, I have no pain. I really do, but I don't want to admit it. So she's telling me this for a while. I'm out with a friend talking, and my friend goes, you know, Chris, maybe you should try giving up gluten. I'm like, that is a great idea. That is a great idea. And I come home and I'm like, hey, Nikki, you know, I was talking to my friend. They said I should go gluten-free. I think I'm going to do it. And my wife's like, right? Burn the world down. But here's the thing. Until I was willing to notice my pain, until I was willing to see myself, until I was willing to slow down and pause and reflect and think, is this the kind of life that I want? What kind of me do I really want to be? And it was honestly, in those moments, I realized that I am just suffering because I feel like this is what people like me deserve. Been there before? Some ailment, something you think about, some habit, something that you miss out on, and you just think, well, this is the best it's ever going to be. This is what I'm entitled to. This is what I deserve, which is pain. People like me just get pain. And it wasn't until like I stopped and I'm like, that is stupid, right? And that's a lie. That's something I am carrying with me on purpose because it feels like what I deserve. And it was when I started thinking about what could be better. Is there a better me out there? And what am I willing to try? This is around every New Year's that we do New Year's resolutions, right? That's essentially the same thing where we pause and we think and reflect of, okay, what happened last year? And what do I want to do this year, right? Like, maybe you don't, like, post it on social media. Maybe you're not, like, writing it out and letting the whole world know. But, like, during the commercial break of Flirty Dancing, right, your all-new favorite TV show, Jordan, like, even in that, like, that moment, that space, you might, like, pause and think, huh, what do I want to do? And really, most of us start at one place, and it's like we go start with our body, right? For New Year's resolution, what am I going to do? I'm going to lose 35 pounds, right? And I'm going to do it. And you get motivated and you spend money on things and you get pants so you look good while you're trying to lose 35 pounds, right? And you're getting like gloves so that it looks like you lift weights. You're doing all those things, right? And you show up once and you work out for like 10 minutes, 15 minutes, maybe a half hour, right? And you don't eat Jack's pizza that day. Next morning you get on the scale and you didn't like lose any weight. You actually probably gained weight. And you're like, what? What happened? I did all the right things. Right? Because the American dream lives on. I want all the benefits without any of the work. Right? And so a lot of us, we have these dreams of what we want to be when it comes to other New Year's resolutions, of like what kind of books we're going to read, or what books we're going to write, of what we're going to do with our friends. And we're like, we're going to stand to our boss, and no more is he going to like bulldoze through me, and I'm going to really tell him what I think. Or it comes to like your money, I'm going to get out of debt. And you have these great ideas because it feels good to dream. But then when it comes to taking that first step, you meet resistance, you meet pain, you meet awkwardness, you meet the scale again, and you're like, no, I guess I can't. And you go back to, this is all I'm entitled to. But here's the thing. Like with the new year is right after the winter solstice. And there was a group of people, these mystics, that really did believe that around this time they noticed that the sun is it's getting lighter just even a little bit more. They're noticing it. And they had this belief, they had this idea of like with the winter solstice, there is this new sun coming. There is this warmth. There is this life, that there's something just underneath the surface, but we can't see it yet. Right? It's like right now you're not like walking saying like, ooh, it's so toasty warm out. Ooh, yeah, get the tank tops on, right? Like, but you know that summer is coming. You know that new life is coming, and you can't see it or experience it, but you begin to lean into it. That's the winter solstice. And that's the same way with our dreams. Like, you were created to dream. You were made to evolve. You were made to grow. It is inside us. This is why we bring shame on ourselves when we just like plop down and we don't move, or we get stubborn, or we just say, I'm never going to grow. I'm going to shut down what I think. I'm not going to learn anything more. I'm not meeting any new friends. I'm going to stick with these habits. And then we attach shame to that, because you are made to transcend. You are made to grow, friends. But it's so hard, right? If this is like what we're created to do, then why is it so difficult to do it? That's what we're going to be talking about today. We're going to be talking about new dreams. And this whole idea of like growth, of planning, of dreaming and moving forward is like everywhere in the Bible, right? This is not just some like life coach like tip. This is like riddled throughout scripture. If you take just the book of Proverbs, right? This is the book of wisdom. Do you know that wisdom is not just meant to be some like intellectual exercise? A lot of us, when we think of wisdom, we're like, oh, I'm going to meet with Chris because I'll get all this wisdom from him. Yes, you're right. You would, right? I'm going to read this book. I'm going to read through the whole book, all the Bible in 1 year, because I want to gain this wisdom. I'm going to go on YouTube because I'm going to get wisdom, said nobody ever, right? So you're going to go through all these things, but we then don't, it doesn't always translate into our hands, to our tables, to our feet. And that's really how evangelicals have treated Christianity for a long time. Let's have a spiritual exercise that's all accompanied in my head. And that's beautiful. We have to. I love theology. I love talking. I love learning. But if like we'll take this example. If you believe, which I do, the literal that Mary was a virgin and God conceived Jesus, like I believe that is literally that's true. But if it doesn't lead you to anything, then it's just like a real cool, like, hey, do you know what happened to Mary, right? If it doesn't lead you to, like Mary, to humble yourself, if it leads you, like doesn't lead you, like Mary, to, like, to be conceived, to conceive something beautiful inside you that God deposited in you, if you don't, like, go into the world and bring the Christ to everyone around you like Mary, then the wisdom is just a thing. Then the wisdom doesn't even matter. Can you see that? This is everywhere in the Bible, and I talk about this often because I have to remind myself often, all right, is that in Proverbs 2, it says that wisdom is this woman sitting on this gate, like inviting people, saying, almost mocking us, and saying, can you hear me and can you see me? I'm readily available. And then chapter 8, it talks about how wisdom is baked into all of the world. Everything in this world, there is wisdom. And it's this, right? This is Richard Rohr. He says that everything is not God. Right? Like this thing is not God. The tree is not God. But God is in all things. Right? If wisdom is baked into creation, and that everywhere we go, we can experience this kingdom of God, this heaven, this love, that's what Proverbs does, is helping you see everywhere you go, there's an opportunity to experience this good and beautiful God. There is this opportunity to grow, to love. And what does love do to you? When you like, when you walk through the doors of your home and your dog runs to you, right? There's that you experience love, and love brings you to a different place, right? You could be stressed at work, you could be angry. You after the Vikings game, go find your dog, right? Like, because love moves you from this world to this reality into something else. It helps you transcend, and that is wisdom, friends, to lead us towards love. And like I just highlighted several verses that talks about how this God is inviting us to grow. You could take the book of Psalms, you could take the book of Job, you could take the Gospels of Jesus, teaching us what it looks like to be wise means that we are moving to our feet, we're moving to the table. Like one of them is, the heart of a man plans his way, but the Lord establishes his steps. Listen for God's voice in everything you do, everywhere you go. He's the one who'll keep you on track. Don't assume that you know it all. Run to God and run to evil. That is one of my favorites. Don't assume you know everything, Chris. Proverbs 13, a common sense person lives good sense. Fools litter the country with silliness. So this wisdom thing is like, you can't read through the book of Proverbs, you can't read through a story without this God inviting us saying, are you willing to grow? Are you willing to see? Are you willing to plan, right? Because that's the hard part. Well, actually, no. Planning is the easy part. The doing is the hard part. So if this concept is what God's inviting us into, then what makes it so hard? Why is January like the biggest month for the YMCA, for health clubs? But funny, like May is not, right? Because we all get motivated to do something. Lucky for us, this is in the Bible as well. If you name a character in the Bible minus Jesus, all right, we'll give him, because since he lived a perfect life, you name anyone else, they are messed up people. They have flaws. They have baggage. They have done some horrible things, right? And thank God, because that means we're all included. That means we're in great company. Sometimes we look at, even think about Moses, right? We're going to be talking about Moses. We think of Moses and he has like those perfect white teeth and he's white, of course, right? And he's got that staff and he's like, let my people go, right? That was a joke. Moses was not white. So we think of him as being the strong man, this leader, but where Moses starts is differently. Moses is a Hebrew person and he gets thrown in the basket to save his life, because Pharaoh's going to be killing everyone, enslaving everyone, and Pharaoh's daughter finds him, picks him up, and now he is brought into the family, into the empire, into the power. And all of a sudden, he realizes his real story, and he sees his people being enslaved, being murdered, being oppressed, and he can't take it anymore. And so what does he do? He murders someone, right? He kills one of the Pharaoh's men. And what does he do? He runs, right? There's this tension of where he realizes of who he really is and where he came from and where he's currently at. And he's in the empire. He has the power. And no longer can he just sit idly by and say, well, if I raise my hand to Pharaoh and say, hey, you know, maybe we shouldn't do this. Maybe we shouldn't own people. I'm going to lose out of money. I'm going to lose out of reputation. I'm going to lose out of power. And he can't stand by anymore. And he does something, but then he runs. And this is interesting. He goes into exile, which is, again, a common story throughout the Bible. There is this exile, and he goes there, and that's where he gets married, and he's taking care of livestock. And there is this Jewish tradition, there's this Jewish story about Moses, about the burning bush. And I love this story because I feel like it's like my life story as well. Moses is walking around with his livestock, and all of a sudden it says in Exodus chapter 3, it says this. Moses goes, chapter 3, verse 3, I will go over and see the strange sight, why the bush does not burn up, right? Said Moses. Moses all of a sudden sees that there's this bush burning, and it's actually really not burning. So he's like, hey, I'm going to check that out, right? It's like when you smell like milk bad, and you smell it's bad, and you have to go back again. You're like, I better check twice, right? He sees something odd, and he moves towards it. And this Jewish tradition, this Jewish story said, what if this is not the bush was burning, not just like all of a sudden he saw it and he's like, oh, God's like, light the bush, right? Turn on the light. What if the bush was always burning? What if since Moses has been there, it's been burning, but he never saw it? He never noticed it. Just kept his head down, taking care of what he knew to be true. Which really, if you think about his story, is not too far off. Because for Moses, he'd say, gods don't show up to places like this. Gods don't show up to people like me. God doesn't show up to people when he sees like his people being harmed and I like have a reaction, then I run away. No, I'm a coward. Gods don't show up to cowards. God doesn't show up for people who turn their back on their people and run away so that they can be okay. God doesn't show up in the middle of exile, in the middle of the wilderness. God doesn't show up to people who have some sort of disability. Like next chapter, God's telling more of what he's going to do. And he says, well, God, you can't use people like me. I have a speech impediment. Like I'm less than. You could see throughout Moses's, like this story in 3 and 4 is like he just sees himself as less than. And he even says this. He goes, Moses said to God, Who am I that I should go to Pharaoh and bring the Israelites out of Egypt? And God responds with this, I'll be with you. I mean, we do this all the time. Just even think about what you're dreaming about for 2020. Even think what you're dreaming about for just the rest of the winter. And you might have this inspiration. You might have this thought and this idea of like, yes, I'm going to get this addiction. Like, I'm going to start naming it. I'm going to start doing it. I'm going to start getting my finances in order. I'm going to not let my teenager be able to talk to me this way anymore. I'm not going to let these group of people influence me in the way that I've let them. And you feel that energy, right? It feels good. But when you think about actually confronting your boss, confronting those people, talking to your teenager, trying to spend less, trying to curb whatever it is, that addiction that you're dealing with, all of a sudden you're like, no, because why? Because God doesn't deal like that with people like me. God doesn't show up with people like me. And we discount ourselves and we limit ourselves of saying, no, this is the best I'll ever get. This is the only thing I can get. And what does God say? I am with you. It's not that Moses had all these perfect qualities. It wasn't that he had like these certain strengths or that he went to these certain classes and he got these accreditations and he has this group of friends and this many followers. It was what? Is he willing just to show up and be present? Because God says, yeah, you have all these things, but I am with you, and go. When you begin to dream, when you begin to dream of what the best you could be, and that shame comes, those lies come, being able to pause and say, that's not me. That is not who I am. Why? Because God is inviting you to grow. God is inviting you to evolve, to transcend, to experience, to love, to be the best that you can be. Jesus says this in the story of the prodigal son. At the end, he says, son, I'm with you always, and everything I have is yours. There is this reoccurring story from God again and again and again saying, I am with you. So then what are we supposed to do? If that's the challenge, is that we fill in the blank of God doesn't do this, but God is inviting us to love, to experience this love because it moves us to new places. So here's my question. I end with two things. First thing is this. What is surprising you right now? Where are you being surprised by love? Because anytime that love, we experience love, that's God. And so when we think about spirituality, right, we think of, okay, I want to grow in my ability to connect with God and love. A lot of us, especially if we grew up in the church, we say, well, I'm going to start doing my devotions. I'm going to read the Bible every day. And I'm going to experience God that way. Yes. Yes, you can. I love reading the Bible. And I experience God in reading the Bible. Then we go to, and I'm going to take some more time and I'm going to pray. Yes. You can experience the presence of God when you take time to pray. But then we think of, oh, maybe I have been experiencing love when I take a nap. And if you're like me, now, if you take naps, I'm not insulting you, okay? You're right now, the nappers are going to get, I'm like, we're organizing, we're on it, right? In my mind, when I think about taking a nap, I'm a 3 on the Enneagram, if you're aware of the Enneagram. And the 3 on the Enneagram is I'm going to win at all costs, never, ever, ever lose. And the dark side of that means I will cheat, lie, and like maybe like trip you up in order to get what I want to get. That's the dark side. Healthy side means I still want to win, right? And so the idea of me taking a nap, I would tell myself, you are weak, you are little, and you're a loser. Because you could be using that time, napping, doing nothing, walking around the kitchen, right? And so, but I've experienced life and taking a nap, but it took me a while to realize that is a spiritual exercise. I can experience the love of God in taking a nap because I'm taking care of my body, all right? Or maybe it's yoga. Maybe it's joining a running group. Maybe it's cooking. Maybe it's in reading comic books. Like, where are you being engaged with love in unlikely places? And what I encourage you to do is, like, if imagine that there's something like a fire, and that's the something that you love, and it's your running group, and then like put a little more fire on it, put a little more gasoline on it, and see if it begins to grow. If you're experiencing something and you're not experiencing love, then put water on it. Had a friend said, feed what you want and starve what you don't. But when you dream of 2020, you dream and something comes up and you're like, I would like to lean into that. I'd like to do that. But then that lie comes and says, well, you can't do it because that's not really spiritual. That's not really God. So I'll share you with mine. And when I wrote these out, I laughed at myself because even now I just feel like it's really stupid. And my whole point of this message is to say, it's not stupid, really. But I still think it's stupid. Two places in 2019, I've been surprised that has brought me love. First one is hip hop music. Honestly, I've experienced a deep love through hip-hop music. And when I was a teenager, it was like hip-hop music was just like, no, you don't do that. It's Caveman's Call all the time, right? That's an old Christian band. And who was the DC Talk, right? That was hip-hop that was loud because it was considered Christian. I have nothing against Christian music, but I'm rediscovering hip-hop. And I was in the kitchen, and I was cooking, and this song came on from the 90s, and I felt, even like right now, I just felt this surge of energy, and I'm like, I gotta move. I gotta dance, right? And my kids were like, what is going on with Dad? And I felt a deep sense of love. As goofy as it sounds, and if you're listening to this on the podcast and you're about to turn it off, wait till the next one, all right? So I was surprised that I could experience God in something that I've never even thought about. Second one, so it's hip-hop. Oh, which led me to, like, I'm reading more on hip-hop artists. I'm trying to watch more documentaries on it. Like, I want to grow. I'm 2020, I'm leaning into. I might even write some of my own hip-hop. You're welcome in advance. So, number two is board games, right? Yeah, Daryl, like, so board games. I have been surprised at how much love I experienced playing the game Sorry with my kids, right? And other people hear that word, sorry, and they all of a sudden want to, like, burn something down, right? Like, for me playing Chutes and Ladders, I've never won at that game with my kids. I think it was the devil, right? That was, but yesterday, I won back-to-back games. What up? Yeah. That's right, kids. Believe in your dreams. So, but I've been surprised by love, because before I had played, I was like, I'm just going to play some games, because that's what parents do with kids. And I've, like, very much enjoyed playing the game of life with my son, Max. I found love in that space. And what I've learned is, it's like when I open up myself, if God is in all things and his love is everywhere, then anywhere I go, I could be surprised by love. And that's an invitation for me to grow. So my encouragement to you is this: allow yourself to be surprised where you go to experience love and notice it. And when you notice that you're surprised by love, begin to lean into it. All right, next one is this then. So if we're going to be surprised by love, then we also have to be aware of what we're tolerating. I have a friend, Ben and Jen, and they take time every year to go through their house to name what they're tolerating. Because we all have things in our house that we tolerate. Ours one, my wife doesn't know this, you're welcome, honey, right? Ours one thing that we tolerate is that we had a junk drawer in your house. Who has a junk drawer in their house, right? It's usually in the kitchen, and it's like, hey, I have these random parts to this toy that I don't know where it's gonna go, but I don't wanna throw it away. Where does it go? Junk drawer, right? Oh, I have 5 paper clips. Where should I put them? Junk drawer, right? And we had one. And every time I'd like, hey, honey, do you know where the lighter is? She's like, oh, I think it's in that drawer. I'm like, and I would open up, and instantly my blood pressure would go up, and it was like, dur, 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 right? And I just shut it, because I didn't wanna deal with it anymore. And, or you could walk into your living room and you see that there's like that small stain on the rug that not maybe everyone notices, but you notice it. Or it's like the handle on the cabinet that's just a little wonky. Or like for us, when we sold our house, we realized that we never actually put a door on the pantry, right? So you just don't finish the project. And it bothered me every time, like, why don't we have a door? I'm like, oh, I don't want to deal with it. That's what you tolerate. And they would go around their house, they'd name it, so when they had time, the projects, they'd pull it out and say, oh, today we're going to work on that stain in the rug. We're going to put a door on the pantry. In the same way, you need to do this in your own life. Take an account of what do you tolerate? Because really, like, that little stain in the rug, that junk drawer, is it going to, like, bring, like, death to me? No. But if you pass that rug, what, 4 times a day, and you look at it, and you get irritated, you get stressed, that just keeps compiling up. In your own life, what do you tolerate? About the way you see yourself? The way you think about yourself, the way you let your partner talk to you, how you spend your money, what you watch, what you don't watch, what you eat, what you don't eat. And there's something, at least for me, I can name like 6 things that I just tolerate with myself. And I'm like, oh, I don't want to do that. I'm not going to deal with it. And so I just put it away. Because I don't think it's not a big deal. It's not the right time. And it's kind of like a paper cut. You get one, you're like, ow, that hurts. Then it goes away. Right? Maybe I'm just super strong and I have a high threshold of pain, right? That's a way to couple myself, right? But it hurts and then you move on and you're like, oh, no big deal. If you have those tolerations, after a while, it's going to be like, am I nearing death of paper cuts? And it impacts your mental health. It impacts how you're able to experience love and how you're able to show up. So how do you notice what you're tolerating in your own self? Exactly. You have to get quiet. Maybe you have to journal. Maybe you need to have a friend or a therapist, right? Sitting down with someone and saying, okay, what am I tolerating? And giving yourself the space and the permission to see what that is so that you can be the best you. Because there is something underneath the surface, friends. God is doing stuff in you. God is inviting you to grow, to evolve. And you can't see the fullness of it yet. But that promise and invitation is there. And naming those tolerations can help remove those so they make more room for you to grow. So this is how I want to pray. I'm going to invite you to participate in this. I call it a table prayer. And I'm going to invite you, again, you do not have to, right? I've been in churches where I'm like, you got to do this. And I felt pressure. And I'm like, okay, I'm going to do it. I don't want to get in trouble, right? If you want to participate in this, what I'm going to do is in a little bit, I'm going to ask you to close your eyes. And we're going to do a visualization, right? This is a way of praying. And maybe you're here and you're like, we can't visualize and pray. That's the devil. Then don't participate in this one, all right? There's something about using our mind, using our creativity that can help, that God can use to help us grow. And what I'm going to invite you to do is imagine that you're at this table, and I believe that God's going to invite us to some things. So if you'd like, close your eyes. Allow yourself to be quiet. I'd like you to visualize you walking into a room, wherever that favorite room is, and there is a table. And on that table is all the beautiful things from 2019. And that moment with your friend, that moment you felt loved, the moment you felt strong. And also on that table is all the dark things. And the things that were said about you, the things that were said to you, the things that you said about someone else, the things that you did that you never told anyone. And around that table is people that bring you joy and bring you life. And you might even notice some of the spaces on the table that are empty, the people that you've loved that have gone. And maybe there's even people around the table that rob you of joy. Now imagine Jesus walking into that room, and Jesus takes a seat, and you might feel excitement. You might feel some fear that God might be able to see those things that are good and also those things that you've been trying to hide. What things would you celebrate with God about? Like an excited kid wanting to show you their room. What things do you point and see this, God? And what are the things that you're going to try just like pushing under that plate? And what things would you want to give God? What are those experiences? What are those words? What are those spaces that maybe in this moment you're ready to give? What are those tolerations? And so God, even now, we give you those things. And some of them we are so ready to be done with. We're so ready to put in your hands. And some it feels like there's just like this kung fu grip that we're not going to let go. We give it all to you. And in exchange, God, you've created space. With those things being gone, there is space for new friends, for new words, for new life, for new growth in our bodies, through our bodies, in our mind, in our creativity. And I pray that this year we will move for those new spaces of love. And things will go back on the table. Things that are hard, things that are not life-giving. But we trust, God, that when you say everything you have is ours and you're with us always, that you will be at that table with us. And we love you. Amen. So I invite you to stand. We're going to do a little bit more worship. And I'm going to invite some of our prayer ministry people to come forward. I personally do that exercise a lot because I feel like it helps me be able to celebrate but also see what I'm hiding where I find shame. If something got stirred up, and you'd like someone to talk to, or you'd like someone to pray with you, can I have the ministry team come up? That would be great. These are people who would love to hear from you, be able to pray for you, and give you some encouragement as well. So thank you for coming, Neighborhood Church. Go Vikings, and thank you for coming.